Previously on the Jay and Dan podcast.
We took staff to Regina, Saskatoon, Winnipeg, Edmonton, Calgary. Duthie's not doing that. We're showcasing our country. That's we don't leave our country.
Duthie's betraying our country. Hotels.com might be taking a bath on that room so that you can take a bath in that room.
And a new extension just opened up and it ends 5 minutes from my house. I have been watching the construction of this highway forever. Today was the day. I hop in the car. They're like, "That is this like Christmas morning to you?" I was like, giddy.
You're excited.
Pop down the highway, but to get on it, the cones are still up. They had to have like an opening ceremony, so I didn't get to drive it yet. We got a pizzeria coming in.
No name pizzeria or big chain?
It's called like Wackies or something. I don't know. That's they're putting in the ovens today. Oh, there's Tim. Tim showed up. Okay. Well, you didn't show your face.
You're listening to the Jay and Dan podcast.
Wackies.
Dance. Dance.
The name of that pizzeria? Twisted.
Tony Twist. He owns it. That'd be a good name for a pizzeria owned by Tony Twist.
Was it Tony Twist I ran into one night, like 5 years ago? And he's like, "Remember that night we had in like London or something?" I'm like, "We've never met." And he was adamant. He's like, "Nope, we spent though." I'm like, "No, I've never spent."
Yeah, but you've had a few nights.
No, but I would remember Tony Twist.
In London, though?
But how you would have been with me, too.
How many triple G&Ts had we had? Man, the G&Ts are good in London.
You would have been with me. No, London, Ontario.
Oh. I thought we were talking about London, England.
Nah.
Oh. London. I've only been to London twice in my life.
I was with you both times.
Yeah, that's... So maybe you're right. I don't think we have met Twister. So that's been Twist Talk. Twist Ties. We tied a bow on that one.
Have you been to more cities with me than anyone else?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. In this country, definitely. No question. Well, yeah, because even my parents, we didn't travel that much when we were young. I guess we went playing hockey as a kid, went to a lot of small towns. That doesn't really count. So cities, yeah, 100%.
Oh, those tournaments, though, when you'd go you'd take over the floor of a hotel, the mini sticks going on, and the parents, "Don't come in here!" Like, all the parents just boozing it up in the hotel.
Yeah. And just, you can imagine owning a hotel and having all those kids, and then, like, why would you ever do that to yourself?
Hey, it's...
Going to that business?
Those rooms are full.
Oh, God.
And then there was always the hockey bag room.
That's right. You never get that smell out of those walls.
Oh, by golly, Jesus.
Just put that one in one of the smoking rooms.
Yeah, I don't think they have smoking rooms anymore.
I was listening to the Conan podcast. John Mulaney was on.
Love that guy.
He said he's a smoker. Yeah. It's like, you know, there's certain people you just would never peg them as a smoker. And that is one of those guys. That really surprised me.
If you want to see great stand-up, watch John Mulaney stand-up on Netflix. It is top-notch. He is, and as Conan pointed out, he's like from a different era. He's like from the 40s.
Yeah, they were talking about their shared family history, both Catholic, both kind of had parents who were sort of old-fashioned almost. Like the world that they were experiencing outside of their homes was very different than the old-fashioned Norman Rockwell-like world inside their homes. Probably much like our upbringings. You had a very... old-fashioned type upbringing, a lot of
farming,
a lot of fiddling around the kitchen table on a Sunday, a lot of hoedowns.
Come on, it'll be fun.
Dancing with the pigs would come inside. You'd allow the pigs to come inside, and then you'd bring them up on their hind legs, and you'd dance with them.
River time. Hey, Mulaney did say something, and I wonder if you picked up on this too. About when someone says, "Oh, I really liked your special." And then he's always like, "Oh, thanks, thanks." But he now actually takes that in and says, I really appreciate that, because we have people come up to us and they say, hey, we watch your show all the time. We grew up with him. And you kind of feel embarrassed. You just say, oh, thanks. Really appreciate it. But then it stuck with me. I'm like, yeah, he makes a good point.
Yeah, you have to appreciate that kind of thing. Today, I was at a restaurant having lunch with a friend, and the waiter right away was calling me Mr. Onright. And my friend, who I went to college with, she was like, how do you know that guy? I'm like, I don't know that guy. And I said, I'm pretty sure he knows me from TV. She's like, so he just sees you on TV and then he just calls you that? And I was like, well, I think it's just like a courtesy thing. It's like really nice. I said, it makes you feel like a regular or something like that. She just could not wrap her head around that one. She thought it was an invasion of privacy.
Meanwhile, you're giving them death glare like, you better call me that.
Oh, I loved it. I just love that. That's one of the perks of the job. And as we've pointed out, again, and by saying this, putting it out into the universe, this means it will happen at some point, and then I will regret even mentioning it. I've never had a single person come up and say something negative to me, to my face. Lots of people on social media, lots of people have said, I don't like you. I don't like the way your face looks. Why do you dye your hair?
That was the latest one. Someone sent you a full email saying you should stop dyeing the hair because you're not fooling anyone.
The part I didn't include in the, if you follow my Instagram stories, I put my reply to him. What I didn't include was that he also said I dyed it in 3 layers. It seems very complicated. Who would ever do that? Boy George in the 80s, maybe?
The strangest one I ever got was when I first started on TV in Vancouver. And someone sent me an email after I was on air for like 6 months. They're like, hey, I noticed you fixed the left side of your face. Can you tell me what you did? Because I need to do it as well.
It has changed my life.
That is hilarious.
So I'm like, so I start looking in the mirror. I'm like, what was wrong with me?
Oh, my God.
Was I drooping?
Old droop-so tool.
And that's when I was young. You know, I was like, my whole life ahead of me.
Did you have a stroke?
Don't think so.
Oh, God, that would be tragic. And now, City TV Sports with Droops O'Toole and Monica Deal.
Yeah, Monica Deal, she had a great gig. We did the 11 o'clock news. She came in at like 10:45.
What a stunning woman. Was she tall? She seemed like she was tall when she did Electric Circus and all that.
Everyone seems tall to me.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, she was very tall. Very nice.
That would be a great title for your book.
Everyone seemed tall to me.
Yeah, that would be an awesome title.
And I used to fool my kids. I didn't say I was tall, but they used to think I was tall because they're shorter. Now my my oldest daughter, Sydney, she's over 5 feet.
She's creeping up toward you.
But the scam is over with her. She's like,
yeah, she knows.
Yeah, she's like, you aren't tall. I'm like, what? I'm average height. She's like, no, you aren't.
5'8" and a half. I'm we like, measured you. I might have been on, no, it wasn't on the podcast.
It was on TSN radio.
We were filling in on the radio for James Cebulski. Remember that, Christoph?
I do. It was our first time working together.
That's right. And we did the measurement. And we did it twice just to make sure. Bang on, 5'8" and a half.
That's right. Absolutely. No, it was 5'9" and a half.
No, 5'8" and a half. I was.
No, I'm 5'9" at least. I'm 5'9".
No. Hold on. No. This is revisionist history. It was for sure 5'8" and a half. You've always said that, 5'8" and a half.
I have always said 5'9" and a half, so I'm lying?
I think so. Hmm. I think you're giving yourself an extra inch, which we've all done. Believe me.
Hey,
I've given myself a couple.
I recommended, our guest just got here, I recommended that John Mulaney special. I sent you a clip of another show I highly recommended. Mike Tyson Mysteries, maybe the greatest show on television.
Well, let's bring Gary Roberts in here and see if he's a Mike Tyson Mysteries fan. Gary Roberts, everybody!
It's easy to consume. It's 11-minute episodes, and it is purely brilliant.
How are you, my buddy?
How are you, buddy?
Good to see you.
Come on in. Have a seat over here.
Come sit right over here.
Yeah, we're already taping.
It's happening.
I'm great. How are you doing, Gary?
I always envisioned meeting you in person and wondered how jacked you'd be. And the answer is completely jacked. Like completely ripped.
I'm back to the way I was when I played junior hockey. Skinny and fat.
How are you doing?
Yeah,
how are you?
That's like, don't you?
Well, look at me.
Is that special workout water? Or is it just regular water?
It's just special water.
Yeah.
It is.
Dolomia. or Dolomia, or however you want to say it, if you're Italian, I guess. They bring that in from Italy. The Italian Alps.
Oh, really?
And that helps?
I drank out of the spring probably now 5 years ago now. Wow. And went down and did a deal with the company, and they send us over water. I'm trying to, you know, evolve, and I'm a bit of a green guy, so.
Right.
So we buy a lot of glass, too, but it's no different than anything else. It costs money to get it here.
Right.
But we use it for our program. It's amazing water, high pH, helps guys recover.
Have you ever had Orono tap water?
I was just going to say, what about Whitney tap?
That's good water.
Oxbridge water is actually pretty good, so I could probably move on from that.
It seems like a lot of trouble.
A lot of work.
For just to hydrate Phil Kessel.
Well, that's why we're a high-performance program.
How much water should we be drinking today? I see people at the gym.
Oh, yeah, you can. Yeah, my hair is better. You don't have to.
I don't have to.
No.
Wreck my hair.
Yeah, that's right. You look fantastic. You literally have not aged.
Well,
you have not aged.
My wife cleaned me up today and got rid of some of the gray. So, you know, I'm like you.
What, she shaved you?
Well, no, there's, you know, a little dye, you know.
Okay.
So I look good. I mean, you guys look good gray. Me, not so much, but.
What are you talking about? You look fantastic.
I'm okay.
How much are you actually working out yourself? Like, just you, because you're working other people out, but just what about you?
I would say for me, I still skate twice a week. So I skate Tuesday mornings with a bunch of alumni and some young guys that push us up at the NTR rink in Newmarket, owned by Wes Jarvis and Mike Gardner. And we do that on Tuesday mornings, and it's a good skate. And then I skate Thursday nights with a good group of guys in Stouffville that my brother organizes a skate there, and there's some good young players out there. So I get two skates a week in the winter, and then I try to do like three or four workouts on top of that just to kind of stay in it.
Right.
You know? Like, I'm not breaking any records anymore. But
right.
Just trying.
You're maintaining.
I'm trying to practice what I preach, which is a healthy lifestyle. So, you know, I've always been that kind of, you know, that guy. If I'm going to preach it, and I'm going to, and I don't mean preach, but, you know, if I'm going to speak of it and make people believe I understand what I'm talking about, I better at least look the part, you know, far from game shape, I say, but still okay.
Does our camera guy, Dean Willers, take part in either of those skates with you?
He used to, but he took so many slashing penalties. And, slashing, hooking. He was one of those guys.
Lazy
just
penalties.
He's just trying to get a piece as you go by him, right? So he could be, like, you know, dripping blood from the eye. So we had to cut Dean from our skate.
Dino, he's a legend.
He is. He's a great, great guy. We always enjoyed having Dean out to skate with us, but we haven't seen him lately. He must be really busy.
He actually does. I think he might be at the World Juniors in the Czech Republic with those guys.
We've spent a couple of Olympics with that guy.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
He'll
if you ever want to go to the Olympics, go with Dean Willers.
Yeah. He bring his hockey stick with him?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
You guys?
Pretty much. Pretty much. Hey, so you've got something going on you want to promote. I wanted to mention that before I forget.
We have a Deck the Quads.
I love
challenge that
way.
We're doing for Jumpstart CCM. We're raising funds for sporting equipment for kids that can't afford it. So we've got a program that we put up every Monday morning, 500, which is inclusive of 500 lunges per week, and we're trying to raise those funds, obviously, to help kids play sports, which is obviously a passion of mine and something that I believe has given me everything I have in my life. So anything we can do to help young kids get out there, our youth get out, be active, be involved in any sport, any activity, then we try to do that.
You know what's great about Jumpstart? Every cent goes into the program because all the overhead is covered by Canadian Tire.
Yeah, and we have Pat Higgins is our local Uxbridge Canadian Tire, and he's a big supporter of Jumpstart and my annual golf tournament that we do. All those funds each year that we raise at the golf tournament in August also goes to Jumpstart in the Durham region to help our youth pay for sports.
How do people get involved with the Deck the Quads program? How do they do it?
Well, they go on and
Your website?
Yeah, or onto our Instagram.
Okay, yeah.
They can find us on Instagram, and they if they donate over $75, they get a nice pair of training shorts from Adidas.
Oh boy, cool. That's decent.
So we're just trying to get it out there. And also, it's the training program, right? You get basically a free training program. We put some thought into the programming, so you can actually use that programming to continue your training after the Deck the Quads campaign is over after Christmas.
That's awesome.
That is actually fantastic. I love that you put thought into the actual program itself.
Well, I
guess you can't just do anything half-assed, can you, Gary Roberts?
Yeah, like I always say, like that's why I think I keep my team small. I keep my program pretty small. I think it's an elite program, and I always say that bad reps are for daycare. Right? So
nice.
We don't do a lot of bad reps at the Gary Roberts program.
Can we get back to Canadian Tire? Do you ever just go to Canadian Tire, walk around? I love that store.
I do go around Canadian Tire.
I know.
Yeah, and I usually have my dad with me when I need to really buy something. Right? My dad's like, okay, Dad, we got to go over here and buy some stuff to fix something.
Right.
Yeah, I used to take my dad when I really need help at Canadian Tire.
Is it true that you, I always under the impression that you, because you played lacrosse and you were a great athlete growing up in Whitby, I was always under the impression you were always in great shape. But in fact, I read that Badger Bob Johnson was the one who sort of saw you early on when you were with the Flames and said, you're actually not in good, you need to be in better shape.
Yeah, and
he was the one.
Yeah, and I came into the NHL, so I was an 1984 draft pick. So think back to 1984.
That's when the training camp was where you got in shape guys,
I would
right?
say the Calgary Flames were ahead of their time there. They had a lot of college players and some veteran players that were very fit.
Right.
So I played lacrosse and I played hockey. I didn't weight train.
Right.
And it wasn't really part of anything I was part of. I played for Brian Kilray in Ottawa. You know, he fired my good friend Lauren Goldenberg because he thought, you know, we were doing too much off-ice training and
wow.
wasting practice time. So
that's
amazing. Brian Kilray said, okay, enough of running stairs, guys. Get on the ice. We can do that stuff. So I wasn't really a weightlifter. And I went to Calgary and I got involved in all these fitness tests. And I am asthmatic. So I go to Calgary, first time ever at high altitude in my
right.
life. The only thing I think I'm going to do really good on is a two-mile run, and I have an asthma attack in the two-mile run. And then I go in to do the strength test, which I've never really done much of, and I fail all those tests. So, you know, Badger Bob in front, I think he used to have like 70 players at training camp back then. He stood up and said, basically our first-round draft pick was our worst-conditioned player at camp this year.
Wow.
So I always tell people.
That must have been fun.
Yeah, I always said, like, if you could beam me up at any time in my career, that I was sitting in a room in front of 70 players and basically got called out in front of 70 players that I was the worst conditioned player at training camp. And that left a huge mark on me, right? Like, I was either going to quit hockey or I was going to come home and get on a program and start training. And it still took time after that, but the next year I went back. Badger Bob Johnson followed me around every test. And I can remember going to Audrey Bakewell's power skating at a university in Calgary. And I'd bring in a chin-up bar with me that I put in the doorway. And every time I went through the doorway, I would do chin-ups. Because it was the worst test. I think I did like 1.5 chin-ups at my first training camp.
Sounds now, like me.
So I got like... You know, I was either going to go home and quit hockey,
yeah,
or I was going to learn, oh my gosh, there's a lot more to playing hockey than just playing hockey. And I had to become very fit, but also because Calgary Flames were way ahead of their time. They had amazing veteran players that were very fit. I walked in and saw guys hanging from chin-up bars with plates between their legs doing pull-ups, and I'm like,
who's doing that? Otto?
Where am I? Like, I remember a player by the name of Dave Heidmeier. So I walked in and I remember him. The first guy I saw was doing plated, he had a knee brace on, and he was doing weighted pull-ups.
Jeez.
And Paul Baxter, Tim Hunter, Doug Risebrough, Lanny McDonald, all these old-time players, they were a very, very fit group. So it forced me to get my crap together. Very early
so
in my career.
So when would they have started that? Like, you think Lanny, you think he would have been old school and not doing the off-ice stuff.
You talk about chiseled. Have you seen that guy?
I haven't seen him in years. No.
His forearms, and I still play in the old alumni game with him. You'll shake your hand, and your arm goes numb because this guy is still jacked.
Love
and,
it. Wow.
So, you know, that was the, you know, I think of a guy like Lanny who was, you know, there's certain people you come across in your career that are so influential. Brian Curry, I spoke of, or my early junior coach, right? Like, who would yell at me every day. But, you know, he would say, you know, if I stop yelling at you, kid, it means that I've given up on you. I actually think you can do something, right? And Lanny took me under his wing along with Joe Noondyke when I first went to Calgary, and he was such an amazing mentor for Joe and I. taught us so much about how to act on and off the ice. So I was just fortunate to come across those people early in my career that I think I use a lot of what I learned from those guys today.
I feel like we should get right into this list.
Well, I just wanted to ask one question. So you train guys in the off season, but you played lacrosse mm-hmm. all the time growing up. So what do you say to a current athlete now that is not in junior hockey, that wants to train all summer, but his parents or someone else is trying to tell him, no, you don't have to do that all summer. You should play other sports. Because that must have been influential. You won championships in lacrosse.
For sure. And I still, believe me, there's still a part of me that really wants players to be multi-sport athletes for as long as they can. Like, I totally believe in it. I totally believe you become a better athlete by playing other sports. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you have to play rep everything, because rep lacrosse is as busy as rep hockey. But, for example, our program every summer, our athletes, our players go out and they play a different sport every day as part of their warm-up.
Hmm.
Right? Like, whether it's spike ball, whether it's basketball, whether it's soccer. Right? We have guys doing activities every day. They're working on their athleticism without them really knowing it. And we do that a lot with our younger players and even our pros. I got to go out to the field sometimes and say, okay, guys, enough of the spike ball. We got to go lift some weights.
Right.
So I'm a big fan of being a multi-sport athlete for as long as you can. Unfortunately, now, today, you're having to specialize much earlier than we used to have to.
Yeah. Gretzky talked about that. You know, like, he played baseball in the summer, and he's like, I that's what I want people to do, what you just said, literally.
Literally. So I still think there's an element that we as adults and as coaches and mentors, I still believe that we need to encourage players to be as active as we can in other sports, and we try to mimic that in our summer program.
Speaking of your program, can we just quickly touch on that?
Yeah.
You mentioned you try to keep it small. Is it, like, how do you get in? Like, if I'm an NHL player and I want you to train me,
yeah.
Is it sort of the kind of thing where you have more people requesting to be trained by you than you are capable of fitting into the program?
Yeah, like, I mean, we train out of St. Andrews College, which is an amazing all-boys school in Aurora. But our facility can only handle so many.
Yeah.
And I brought in younger players from, you know, 06s to 02s, as we do the birth years nowadays. I brought in those younger players to also have an opportunity to see what some of the pros do. But I can only handle so many. So when I'm taking a new client, it usually comes from a referral from an agent or from an organization that have asked us to take on this client. And many of our clients are local.
Right.
We're in a market, fortunately, that have a lot of hockey players. So I haven't really had to go outside our sport to create a business. I've had an amazing team. You know, I'm a big team. Like, I believe, for me, I had a team behind the team that helped me make a comeback at 30, that helped me, you know, play 13 more years in the National Hockey League. And I believe that team was so important to me and to what I do today. I've been fortunate to build a team behind the team.
Right.
So I have an amazing holistic sports nutritionist. I have amazing head strength coach. I have a speed coach. I have an assistant. Like, it's a small group. I have a chef. You know, Athletes Care, and our amazing health provider that gives our players treatment. So I know that I made my comeback because of what I did away from the rink, not what I did at the rink. So I've tried to mimic that and give that to all the players in the summertime, so we can give them the best possible program and the best possible chance that they're gonna become better players after they've been with us.
Now, it's also their off season. So you've had, for sure, a player come in hungover to the gills.
Correct.
What do you do to that person? Do you single them out and say, okay, here?
No, usually we do a jump test. We believe in weekends being about recovery. And we know everybody's young, and we understand. We just ask players, we don't want to hurt anybody. So we'll ask players, listen, how'd your weekend go Monday morning? And we can tell usually because we do a jump test that basically gives us a measurement of how well they recovered over the weekend. If they were drinking all weekend, then the chances are their jump test is going to be very poor. And then we say, hey, listen, you haven't recovered from the weekend's a nice way to say it to a new client. Go home, drink some water, have a sauna, get some sleep, see you tomorrow. If every Monday morning you jump poorly,
chances are
that'll go about three. Probably give you two passes, and on the third time, I'm like, okay, kid, you're not getting any better if you're out all weekend. And I'll be honest, I haven't really. We have the odd time, of course, because players will actually come to us and say, hey, listen, I had a tough weekend. I had a wedding this weekend. I was up north with my buddies on the boat. You know, my jumps are going to suck today.
Right.
And we're like, okay, man, good. Then just we're going to give him. We don't send him home. Usually we give them a recovery day, right? And we're big on recovery. It's part of our philosophy, and we'll give them a recovery. We'll give them a recovery workout to just get a sweat and get through the day, and we won't do anything too severe that they risk hurting themselves that day.
I think we should start. So we have a list, an incredible list here of players you played with, coaches who have coached you, and players. Most of these guys you're currently training. So I actually want to start with the players you're currently training.
Okay.
So maybe I would say the most famous one you're currently training is Connor McDavid. So we just want to get a few words from you about all these people we're going to be mentioning.
Or
so
a short story, whatever.
Well,
usually when I start talking about a guy like Connor McDavid, it's a really long story. I would just say committed, 100% committed, an amazing athlete and person.
When did you first meet him? When did he first come to you?
Bobby Orr called me when Connor was just going into, he'd just been granted exceptional status.
Right.
That's a great start to any story. Bobby Orr called me. Right there.
So when Bobby Orr calls me, I was like, okay, I got to get this, right? And he said, I'm going to send you this young player. He's 15 years old. He's going to go play in the Ontario Hockey League. Don't hurt him.
Be
so
gentle.
I remember going into my team and I said, hey guys, we got this young player that, you know, Bobby Orr always says, like, people thought I was the greatest skater ever to skate. Bobby Orr told me that this player was going to be the best skater ever to play. And Connor McDavid was 15 years old. Wow. But Bobby Orr obviously saw it. And then when Connor walked in our gym, I knew he had a really special person. Very, very shy, very, very, very quiet. I would say very, very green. And we just, you know, obviously took care and progressed him very slowly for the first years and just tried to listen to Bobby Orr and make sure that we put him in a position to succeed every year.
So is it a lot of squats with him? Because he has a gear that no one else has on the ice.
I would say it's really the consistency of his program since he was 15. You know, people will call and say, I want the, you know, Steven Stamkos program. Well, you don't just get the Steven Stamkos program. You build. I'm a big believer in not skipping steps and everybody's development, and you build. And then we take a 15-year-old like Connor McDavid, and we had a plan for him where we thought he would be at 18 in his draft year. And we didn't rush that plan. You know, some guys join the program and they say, well, why am I not squatting over there? Why am I not doing that 350 pounds or 400-pound deadlift? Well, because you're not capable of doing that. You could probably do it, but there's a good chance you're going to hurt yourself doing
it.
So we have a player comes in, he gets evaluated, he gets tested, and we have a system. You're graded. Here's where you are. You're a C+, right? Or this is your level of experience weightlifting. You're in a certain category, and you work through those categories till you get to be, you know, a Steven Stamkos or a Connor McDavid. And I know Connor last summer, or maybe even two summers ago now, I remember getting a call from Brian saying, you know, Connor's pretty happy today. I said, why? He said, well, he trapped our deadlift over 500 pounds today.
Oh,
and
wow.
He never ever thought he would do that.
Right.
So it's kind of cool little stories along the way. And I think for me, you know, just seeing players' successes for me is what motivates me to continue to do what I do and what our team does.
And you mentioned Steven Stamkos, because I think that's a player that you're famous for having trained and for having turned. I remember him coming into TSN when we held the draft lottery here and shaking his hand. And so he's obviously 18 or 17 at the time. And I was like, this guy has a handshake like an Alberta farmer now. Like, it was really intense.
Gee,
this kid is tough. Like so obviously it was paying off what you were doing.
Yeah, and I think he set some challenges along the way that have, you know, given him trouble too, right? He had a He had a broken leg. He had the blood clot. He had a torn meniscus in his knee. And he's had some challenges. No player goes through his career without having those challenges. But yeah. A guy like Stamkos, who is just such an amazing human being. I would love this kid like he's my son. I was 42 years old. He was 18, and we were line mates. And wow. For me, right, I had such an amazing year with him. I was brought down to Tampa to spend that year with helping to mentor Stammer along with Mark Recchi. And we had an amazing year hanging out with Stammer. And mm-hmm. He was over, all the time hanging out with my son. And we just had a bond and a relationship, and for me to watch his successes and be part of that, and watching him grow as a player and an athlete and a person, has been very fulfilling for me.
Okay, let's dive into your career.
Wait, we have to do one more.
Okay.
Just one more, because it's not on here, but because we've talked about the elite level athletic ability of Connor and Steven, and then there's another person that you train that maybe isn't known so much for that, and his name is Phil Kessel.
Right.
Now, how did Phil... Now, there's always a joke about Phil and the hot dogs and everything.
Yeah.
But how did he come to you? And I'd love to know your personal experience with Phil training.
Well, we love him.
Well, I love him, too. But I've learned to love him. You know what I mean? Like, Phil has learned... he came to us when he went to Pittsburgh, and I was actually working for Pittsburgh at the time. Jim Rutherford said, we really would like to see you go see Gary Roberts in the summertime. And I'm sure Phil was reluctant to it at first. As a Leaf, I never worked with Phil. So he came the first year, and it was a work for us. It was trying to get used to what Phil, we realized right away, he is a very competitive guy, and he is an amazingly powerful athlete that people really didn't give him credit for.
Right.
And you would never have known. Of course, you see him skate, and you know he has some level of power.
Right, and you see the shot.
And shot and yeah. his skating and his ability to pass the puck. He's a great player. But I would say over the years, he wins the Stanley Cup his first year with us, wins the Stanley Cup the second year with us. Right. So I then obviously I'm texting him in June, because he's not texting me. Right? I'm like, Phil,
where are you?
When are you coming back? He says, the golf course in Florida closes July 4th. I'll be in July 4th. But the truth is, I kid around a little bit about that, and that's him, but that's his personality. But he is so much fun when he comes to my program. My staff love him. The players that enjoy being in the gym with him, but he'll be looking like he'll have a 300 pounds on him on a single leg rear foot elevated split squat with a safety bar, and someone will be yelling, whether it's James Neal yelling usually at him down at the other end of the gym, and he'll actually turn and talk to him while he's squatting this 300 plus on one leg. And I'll be looking at Phil and like, Phil, can we focus here for a couple seconds so he don't, this doesn't drop? But he's learned to, I think he enjoys the program. He enjoys that we're serious, but I recognize it's the summer, like Dan mentioned, right? It's the summer. It's got to be fun for them. It can't be an environment where people are yelling at them.
And everyone's different.
Everybody's
right?
different. Some guys need to be yelled at.
Yeah.
Right? James Neal needs to be yelled at. Yeah. Right?
Does the real deal get a whippy discount?
He doesn't actually. He's so much work that he actually pays me more.
But he's always smiling though.
So yes, he is. He's a sweetheart. But I think for me, I think that's the environment we've tried to create. We've tried to create an environment for athletes that's very positive. And it's very relaxed, but at the same time, there's that element of seriousness each and every day where we're working and getting better. And I can say that whether it's my strength coaches, our chef, the therapist, I've tried to create a real environment that players want to come back.
Players, yeah.
I had such a great time last summer. Like, we are dialed in. We're dialed in on the food. We're dialed in on the recovery.
Yeah.
It's all part of it. When you join our program, you get the whole program.
It's all encompassing.
I'm sold.
Right?
I'm sold.
Yeah, you got to train
the
Dan.
Top athletes. Like, we have some young players that have evolved over the years, and I think being around Steven Stamkos and the Connor McDavids and the Tanev brothers and Tierney, Shore, Anderson, these players that have been with us a long, long time, we've created a little family environment there that the players genuinely enjoy pushing each other.
And coming back to every year.
And coming back and getting, and becoming better.
Yeah.
So it's been fun for our whole group and team to...
I
have to give a quick shout out to Sylvie, who works, and she trains my wife.
She is a machine. She's the fittest person in my program.
Perfect. Sylvie.
So why aren't you on the program?
Judging by the check I just wrote to her. I can't dispute that. We love you, Sylvie.
Sylvie is she's the rock for our program.
You'll have to get me a program I can do at my Fit for Less.
Fit for Less?
We've got 7 weights. They go up to 38 pounds.
Well, we can just lunge. Drink water and lunge.
I asked you up the top, how much water should a regular human be drinking?
I would say, truthfully, like 2 to 3 liters a day if you're not active.
Okay.
Is that you? Not active?
No, I'm active. I work out every day.
Do you?
Yeah.
So, and I say to my athletes, if you're very active and you're a sweater, some guys are real sweaters, some guys aren't. I would say 4 to 5 liters a day if you're a real sweater.
Oh, so, that seems like
that's a lot. It's a lot of going to the bathroom.
It seems like a lot of being.
But your body gets adjusted. Like I probably drink at least 10 of those in a day.
Wow.
You always talk about your dad being on the farm and working
drink
all
too much water.
Yeah,
my wife always thinks I pee out my vitamins. So I drink too much water. Which
my dad would work in the field all day at the farm. He'd come in, have one glass of water, and go back out.
I give my dad a bottle like this, 500 mils.
Yeah.
And I'll give it to him on Friday when he comes out of the house to watch minor hockey. And on Sunday, it's like still not gone. And I'm like, Dad, you haven't drank 500 milliliters of water all weekend. And so, my dad's very similar to that. And I'm yelling at him every weekend.
Okay, we got to go through a little bit of your career here. Toolsy, I'll let you.
Okay, we got to start in Calgary and Mike Vernon.
Yes, my roommate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were roommates. I always got to room with the goalies for some reason. I had Rick Walmsley. I had
Walmer. What a guy.
Walmer. Well, I had some great roommates early in my career. I had Matthew Tkachuk was texting me last night because he was out with Mike Vernon last night. They must have been at a flame function, and Mike Vernon was there. And he just sent this note that said, beauty. So we always joked around. I said, say hi to Mikey for me. I said, he used to go run and get the ice for me for my cold baths on the road.
Wow.
Because I would do cold baths on the road. And that was in my, my late 20s. And Mike Vernon used to get the, and then he said, after Rob sat in it, I used to put my beer in it. Mike Vernon was a great roommate. He took good care of me.
So you mentioned Lanny. There's one I want to ask you about. You guys got him in a trade. John Tinelli. Like, talk about a hard worker.
Oh, he was, for me to have a guy like John Tinelli come to Calgary, those are the kind of players that had such an amazing career and worked so hard every day and were so professional. I just remember how good a guy he was and how well he treated the young players. Like, we had a lot of veteran guys in Calgary, and I think our young players really benefited from having guys like John Tinelli in the organization early in our careers to see the professionalism that they carry each and every day.
How about Al MacInnis? Did he dial back the slap shot in practice?
He did. He was so good at it. Like, he could shoot it so hard, though, and he was so accurate. You would never know it. Like, looking at his curve, you'd think, oh, my gosh. The odd one would get away, I remember. But he was an amazing D-man, amazing shot. And the same thing. Like, he was hard on me. He was hard on me early in my career, as I think he went through a bit of a tough time with his fitness his first year, too. So I would say he wasn't my best friend early in my career, but I definitely learned to, we still talk to Calgary guys. So Vernon, Neuendijk, Suter, MacInnis, we were considered at one point in Calgary, we were considered the couch.
You know,
and you guys must have owned that town.
And we always, once in a while, we get this group text going. So the crazy thing is that some of us get it, some of us don't, because we're so, technically
right.
Yeah, not up to par on our phones.
Right,
we're like,
right.
Did you get that message? We're like trying to, we're losing Texas, and we're like, oh God, okay.
I love that.
Yeah.
Do you guys still do? Do you do alumni stuff with the Flames? You played for a bunch of teams, so they must get so many requests to go to a different place.
Yeah, I would say usually it's Calgary. I try to do Calgary stuff, a little bit of Toronto stuff. I try to do a little bit, but I think with my business and with my kids, right? Like, I have three young kids at home, so I have an older daughter, and then I have a 9, 10, and 14-year-old. So I'm busy guy, and so I don't get to do as much alumni stuff now, especially with my boys playing minor hockey. I was lucky, right? Tonight's a good night, because it's usually a quiet night for me.
Right. Now we appreciate you hanging with us for a little bit.
Okay, how about...
Let's go to... Where are you going now?
Should we stay in Calgary or go to Carolina?
Let's go to Carolina, because I just realized you played with Jeff O'Neill.
Yeah, oh, we got to bring up O-Dog.
Is he here working out somewhere? Do you guys have a gym in this place?
No.
Is he in the gym right now?
Did you at any point playing with him? I remember when he first appeared on TV with us, and I said, I've told the story a million times, to Mark Millier, who was our boss at the time, you've got like the next Charles Barkley on his hands, because unlike most hockey players I've met, this guy really does not give a fuck about what other people think about him.
Are you allowed to say the F-bomb?
Oh, yeah.
We bleep it up.
Yeah. That's impressive.
Yeah.
Jeff O'Neill's just one of those guys that he's never changed, right? He's always had that personality. It's not like he woke up and acts like he does today. He's acted like that his whole life, right? Like... And I think that what makes him so authentic is that he doesn't really change for anybody. He is who he is. And on a serious note, I'm really proud of him. We all struggle to find something in our life after hockey that's meaningful, and you try to find your niche, per se. I'm really proud of him for what he's done and how well he's done here at TSN. He really... has found a nice life after hockey, and he's very good at it.
He really is.
How about
just working on his fitness while that that kind of dropped off after we weren't teammates anymore.
I think so. How about Arturs Urbe?
Archie.
Is it possible to have a short conversation with Arturs Urbe?
The Cobra. He used to poke check us in practice, right?
He was telling us the history of hockey when we ran into him in Russia. He was like, well, it all started...
he did like to talk, but we used to get mad at him because he would literally poke check us in practice, and he was so good at the poke check. You know, he called it the Cobra, and he would just dart out in practice. Meanwhile, you know, you're not really expecting it in practice. Next thing you know, you're on top of him inside the net because you crashed, right? A great, great goalie too, right? I think he's found a way to have a pretty good career. For a smaller goalie, but his exceptional work ethic.
Paul Maurice was one of your coaches there.
Yes,
right?
He was. Yeah. Paul Maurice was.
So back, like we always talk now, like we think if we were actually talented enough to be players, that would be the coach we would want. He just seems like he treats people with respect. And was he always that way?
I would say he was. I obviously was making my comeback in the NHL at 30. So I would have taken any coach. I was just happy to be back playing.
And he probably wasn't much different in age than you.
No, we're about the same, very similar age. So I remember getting to Carolina, meeting Paul. What I loved about Paul Maurice, and I would say he's one of my favorite coaches that I ever had in my career. He was just very, very inclusive. I would say he had used his veterans for feedback. We would have regular veteran meetings, and he'd ask what we thought as far, and not that he did everything we said, but
right.
But we had a good group down there, Ronnie Francis being part of that group, and Glenn Wesley. So we used to, we just have lots of conversations with him. And do you guys need more in practice or do you need less? How, we'd say, hey, I think the team's tired. We need a day off.
Right.
You know, or yeah, we're not skating that hard in practice. Need to do more. And he was just really good that way. And I, so I really enjoyed Paul Maurice as a coach. And I would say, you know, under the circumstances in Carolina, he did a great job. And it's nice to see him having his success. His practices were great. I just remember how hard his practices were. And I love the pace of his practices. And I bet the Winnipeg Jets feel the same way today.
Now, let's go to another coach in Toronto, Pat Quinn.
So, Pat, for me, we always appreciated his leniency. Like, he was a burly, like, when he spoke in the dressing room, we were all listening. But he gave us some freedom to be creative on the ice. And... you know, I remember my good friend Brad McCrimmon, right, who's no longer with us. Love him to death and miss him every day. But Brad McCrimmon used to call me and he'd say, Jesus, you Leafs, you guys are so tough to scout. He said, from one line to the next, I can't figure what the hell you guys are doing.
Interesting.
Because we had some freedom. Pat gave us that freedom. You know, in the end, we probably didn't really win because we didn't have enough structure.
Right.
And we lost in the games against Jersey and Philly.
Teams that had really structured.
Tough to play against and really tight offense.
Interesting.
Like, we used to kid around, like, hey, boys, like, in the dressing room, we would say, hey, boys, make sure Eddie gets at least 40 shots tonight. Right? Because he plays his best. He plays his best when he gets 40 shots. Yeah. Or Cujo.
Right.
Make sure Cujo gets 40 shots. Like, if Cujo, if you look at it, Cujo have anything less than 30 shots, he didn't have a good game. So we used to love giving breakaways to teams and two-on-ones because we used to be creative, but we turned pucks over. But Pat gave us that license to be creative. And I think that's why we, in those years, we were a really fun team to watch. But if you're a scout, like my good friend Brad McCrimmon said, I have no clue what you guys are doing. So in a way, it was a benefit that we played that way. But in a seven-game series against teams that are quite a different, like Carolina, for example, we end up getting beat because we were a little too free, maybe, and eventually it cost us. I appreciated Pat Quinn a lot.
You mentioned Ed Belfour. Why don't we lump in two of the goals? So Ed Belfour, interesting character, and Tom Barrasso.
Yeah, I was so excited to ask you about Barrasso.
Because he...
Well, I'll be honest, you know what?
He was one of the most hated guys in the NHL.
Yeah, I think, you know, you come across goalies that were a little different, and I would say Tom was probably different. I would say I didn't really spend a lot of time with him and to get to know him. He was, you know, he was out later in his career too. We had a lot of guys coming to Toronto. Like, I look at some of the teams that I played on.
Just
we started
names.
Adding Ronnie Francis in Toronto. Doug Gilmore came back for his last game. We had Glenn Wesley come up from Carolina. Yeah. Right? Like, Jeff O'Neill ended up being a Leaf the year that I left. So
Brian Leetch.
Like, all the... I'm like, did Owen Nolan?
Owen Nolan is on that list, Travis Green.
And I met all those players that have come through Toronto.
Yeah.
You're like, holy crap, like, did we really all play together?
It is actually amazing.
How did
amazing.
We never win with that group of guys? That's what I would say.
And I was just going to say that, Gary. You know, you look at the names on the... And then we didn't even mention Sundin, and we didn't mention Cabrelet. Like,
well, they were lifers here, so we didn't have to mention those guys.
You guys had McGillney. Like, you guys had some really amazing talent.
Oh, one of the funnest guys I played with was Alex McGillney. Like, you talk about not giving an F. Like, he just... Like, I remember walking in the room one day, and I'm like, and we used to call him Elmo, and I'd be like, hey, Elmo, like, come on, bud, I got some treatment guys, right? We can get you healthy. You got a bad hip. And he looks over at me. He's in the trainer's room sitting down, you know, hanging out and not getting treatment. And he looked at me and said, Robs, just relax. Let nature heal it. Right, like, that was Alex McGill.
Where is that guy now?
Well, I don't know where Alex is. Like, who knows? But this guy was...
What a talent.
Of all the guys that played, like, he could have four pairs of skates in his stall, and he would be changing actually brands between periods. Or he would have one stick that was 4 to 6 inches longer than the other. So he says, when my back feels really good, I use the short stick. But when my back doesn't feel so good, I use the long stick. Like, he'll have, like, you know, like most of us, if your stick's off a hair, you feel it. He would use a stick 4 to 6 inches longer and change period to period.
Wow.
He was an amazing and still, Yeah, he was amazing. He was amazing guy.
Could you see that Travis Green was going to be a coach?
I was just going to ask that.
I couldn't. No, I did not think Travis Green would be a coach. I didn't think he liked hockey that much.
He always seemed really? Grumpy, right? Mm-hmm. He always looked grumpy. He still does.
He still does.
He was grumpy. Maybe that's why he's a coach now.
Yeah?
But no, I would say I didn't think Travis Green would be a coach. I've had some conversation with Travis since he has been in Vancouver, and obviously he's doing a tremendous job.
He
went through junior and then onto the NHL, so he's put his time in, and good for him.
We're going to go to Florida, like a stint in Florida. And you played with the whole Overdrive crew. You played with O'Neill.
Yeah.
And then you played with Noodles.
Yeah, I played with Noodles too. Both, yeah, what a beauty Noodles is. But that's what I mean. You come across some goalies that are a little offside, and I put Noodles in that category.
But was he all. I was just thinking of him in a dressing room just being this, like, where are we going tonight, guys? Like, yeah, I always feel like he's that guy.
He, for sure. He was a very, very friendly guy. He had a routine like all goalies, but I would say he was one of those players that was really easy to get along with, and you enjoyed your time you spent with him. So, absolutely, he was a good teammate. And
it's like an underrated quality to have a backup who can play for you.
Yeah.
And then also is kind of a glue guy in the dressing room
for too. Sure. And I was fortunate to play it. Like you talked about, Mike Vernon, Rick Walmsley, Curtis Joseph. Like there's some goalies that were really easy to get along with, and we're the glue. Like really, we're the glue in your organization, your team. And Noodles was that guy in Florida. Like obviously, Luongo was the guy, but Noodles did a really good job supporting him.
Should we move to Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
You played with Sidney?
Well, didn't you know I made Sidney? He was young. I was old, right? Like, yeah. I was 41 playing with Sidney Crosby.
That's unreal.
And I remember going to the rink, and I'd be like, oh, God, I hope my legs feel good tonight. Because he's yelling at you, right? Like,
really?
Like, yeah. he wants the puck, and... Yeah. And I remember morning skate one day. I was out there cruising around. He's like, Robs, come on, let's go. And we'd do a 2-on-1, and he'd be like a zone ahead of me, right? I'm like, would you slow down out here? He's like, come on, let's go. And I said, you know, if I try to skate that fast in the morning skate, I'm not going to have anything left for the game. I mean, what can you say? Like, I had my last two centermen, Sidney Crosby and Steven Stamkos. Like, I think about having the opportunity to play with those two players and see the way they prepared and see the way they, how skilled they were and how professional they were as young players. I think it gave me a real indication of where the game was going. Mm-hmm. Right? So when I started my program, I'm like, these guys are going to be the greatest players in the game for a long time. And so it was a real bonus to me to have an opportunity to play with those two players end of my career. And Sidney Crosby is a special person.
And you've seen him evolve, because when he first got into the league, everyone got mad at him because he was always complaining to the refs and stuff. He doesn't do that anymore. He's a more mature Sidney.
Well, Don Cherry used to always single out Crosby,
right?
Yeah.
Because he considered him a whiner early in his career. But you never see Sid like him. I mean, and that's been a long time. He hasn't done that, right?
Of course, like, yes.
He is a true professional, and he's put up with a lot of crap on the ice.
Yeah.
And no player handles it better than he does today. The way the attention that he gets, and you think about the consistency that he's shown over his career, right? Like.
Absolutely.
Not too many players have ever done that.
Kind of similar to your situation where you had a career-threatening injury, you had to retire. Mm-hmm. When Sid was going through the concussion thing.
Yeah, and it turned out to be a neck issue for him.
Right?
Correct.
There was a time when it was looked like he wasn't going to play.
Yeah, he had a tough...
Did you talk to him over that period?
I was part of that a little bit, like through his time. It was kind of... I was... actually, the year that it happened was in the outdoor game in Pittsburgh, and I was playing for the alumni that
year.
Yeah,
he got kind of blindsided
right? Was it Beagle in Washington?
Washington, I think, yeah.
So anyways, so I was there that night, and it was a miserable night in Pittsburgh. It was kind of raining, and, you know, so it was unfortunate hit that he took, and he went through a tough time for a while. But, you know, it seems like those kind of injuries, whether it's your neck or your head, it's just time, you know. You need to take the time and really be careful with it, because you see players nowadays having reoccurring concussions that are out long, long periods of time. So you want to be careful on your first one that you don't come back too early.
Right.
We probably should wrap this up because we got to go do the TV. So I could just sit and talk to you for hours.
Oh, I know.
Gary, about this stuff.
We have so many guys here.
Is it Monday night?
Olaf Kolzig. Vinny LeCavalier. Marty St. Louis.
Gonchar. I could just talk to you about Gonchar for an hour.
Yeah, another magician.
You had Tockett as a head coach?
Great, great guy. I love Rick Talk. He used to come in and his wife beat her and scare everybody into playing harder for him. I think he used to do arm curls and push-ups in the dressing room when he was mad at us in Tampa when he took over. He'd come in and his eyes were really big and he was sweating and his big bald head. And,
oh, my God.
And I used to cry laughing in my towel because he was trying to scare us into playing harder.
He's done pretty well in Arizona, for sure.
But you know what? I think of that, like Rick Tockett. Like, he would say, hey, guys, I'll be at the rink at 8:30. You want to come work on your game? Right? That was the kind of guy he was. Like, he'd be at the rink. You wanted to get to the rink early, work on your game. He'd pull half a dozen guys. Whoever showed up, he'd be out there helping you work on your game. Like, he was a head coach, right? He did it as an assistant coach in Tampa, and he took over after they realized, you know, how bad Barry was.
I was just going to say the Barry Melrose experiment.
Yeah, that experiment didn't go so well. So Rick came in and realized that the players needed to just have some fun.
Yeah.
But he made us accountable, and I think that's because of his honesty and the way that he operates. Players want to play for him.
He was a great player. So sometimes you think, well, a great player isn't necessarily going to be a great coach, but
Correct.
Somehow he has transcended that somehow. But from what you're telling me, it's almost like you must have known he would be a coach. For a guy to just say, meet me at the rink at 8:30 like that, like an assistant at that point, you know,
obviously that's like, really going to be a... really, really loves the game, really has become, you know, a real knowledgeable teacher of the game and is willing to put in, like, he puts in a lot of time. And as you guys know, to be a good coach nowadays... I still believe they probably put in more time than they need to, but they definitely have to know your stuff. You definitely have to be prepared and put your time in. The game's really evolved, right? And
all those things you just said, Barry Melrose didn't do any of them.
No, definitely not.
Well, Melrose, Steven Stamkos wasn't good enough to be in the NHL.
I mean, well, all over Tampa, these big billboards.
And he wouldn't play him.
And then Barry Melrose comes out, after two games, we lose in check. 2-1, 2-1 to the Rangers. Like, pretty good game. So he comes out, these guys are overpaid. Steve Stamkos, we need to send him back to junior. I remember everybody in Tampa going, did he just tell our first overall pick we got to send him back? He's not strong enough. But we ended up, that's when our relationship started, because we ended up working out, Stammer and I. Rick Tockett came to me and said, let's just get him stronger. And he ended up scoring. Think about that. Like, Barry Melrose wanted to send him back to junior. And you know, and then we end up, you know, training him. I was working with him off the ice. He was missing the odd game to do off-ice workouts.
Wow.
To get him a little stronger. He ends up scoring 20 goals from January on.
Yeah.
Right? And then
Barry went back to ESPN. He's still there.
Didn't Stammer just get his 400th recently?
I think so.
I think I told him he's getting close to me. I said, unfortunately, they're not counting my goals in beer league anymore.
It's pretty amazing all the stops you've had along the way. You know,
yeah, I think. Believe me, I'm so appreciative of what the game gave me, the people I've met, the teams I've played on. I've had some amazing experiences and have made tremendous friendships through the game of hockey, and I owe it everything I have in my life.
Great having you on the podcast.
Thanks,
Gary.
Thanks,
Gary. This is great. Now let's go do some TV, and we'll talk to you next week. Hey, Stoff, we never even talked about your vacation. We'll have to do that next week.
You got it.
They're going home.
Yeah.
This is the Jay and Dan Podcast. James Duffy presents the Rubber Boots Podcast.
So we're sitting down at our table. The waiter comes up and he's like profusely sweating. And this is like 100% his first line to us. He goes, "Hello, I am not well. I'm very ill."
You ate there?
I came down with it yesterday. I've just not been good. Not good at all.
Get it at tsn.ca and anywhere you get your podcasts.